This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling, indies, and international. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, what's going on, brother?
Oh, doing good, doing good. Just getting through it, really. Same old, same old.
Yeah, I'm just glad G1 is over. We're going to talk about the last two nights, or the last, you know, pretty much, I guess the last two nights. Overall, did you enjoy the G1?
I did. I, unfortunately, talking to some people, hearing the blowback, and not even just the blowback about the wrestling, but the blowback between people about star ratings, and those arguments have turned people off. I've kind of stayed out of the fray when it comes to that, which is, that pun was not intended. But, like, realistically, I haven't been paying too much attention to it, but I feel bad for that. People are so fighting over it, because I think it's just people dug in a lot, and they're not willing to admit that, you know, some of their opinion is being swayed by that fact, because realistically, to me, this G1 was middling. There was a lot of stuff that was good, there was a few things that were great, and then there was a lot of stuff that was just okay, so I don't know why it's so polarizing, but I guess it just is that the people who are really bought in to end, you know, New Japan and Kenny Omega, Okada specifically, don't want to admit that it wasn't the greatest thing ever, and the people who aren't super bought into it are, I think, just being honest and getting kind of attacked and shit on.
Yeah, I find it interesting. You know, I dole out star ratings, but you know what? I don't live or die by mine. I don't live or die by the grace of God's, of Dave Meltzer's, or anybody's. Sometimes I'll look like, wow, that's a little weird. But I mean, but then like a day later, it's like totally out of my mind. I also think star ratings are, again, our opinions, but sometimes it's just like, it's almost like shocking about how many you hear. I mean, I'm not even talking about how, like, the 6.5 star or whatever the fuck it is. The thing that I got most out of reading The Observer this week was Dave had 37, 4 stars or more G1 matches, right? I had 20. What did you have?
Oh, geez, I'd have to double check. Let me do that really quick with my document here. I'll put in the number 4, and we'll see. I've got 4 11 times in my G1 from start to finish.
So 11.
So I have 11. Actually, one of them is not actually a 4. It's a 3.75. So I have 10 4-star matches. Actually, one of them is the night 4, so that makes it 9. 4-star or above matches for this tournament.
Okay. And Dave, I thought he was trolling, he said he was even low because the consensus he saw was 44-star matches. That has to be a troll because, hey, what fucking consensus are you talking about, Dave Meltzer?
His consensus is me and my friends who like the same thing as me.
Yeah, because obviously he didn't ask our opinion, because, I mean, I had 20, you had 10, I know Chad Campbell, I think he had 21 or 22, so, I mean, it all depends on who you're helping asking, and a consensus isn't, like, I always thought it was more than 5 people,
I would say consensus is over 50, or 49%, you know what I mean? Like,
Well, when you have a consensus, it's like how many people are star ratings are you looking at? You know, if he saw the average was 40, did he only pull 2 people? You know, or yeah. That's what I meant, where he got his consensus of over 40, or 44 star matches. I just got a kick out of that, it's just batshit crazy when you really think about it. About people just dying on the stake over a Dave's star ratings and shit. You know what? How about this? Form your own opinion. Who gives a shit what Dave fucking says, you know? That's how I've gone through life. I think you should treat wrestling like you treat life. I mean, it shouldn't matter just because X has it for it. He's not, doesn't make him right, okay? Yeah, I think you, as long as you've about, you know, I just find it funny how much of a rigmarole. It almost makes the G1 unfun to watch, knowing you're going to hear the little stupid fucking arguments that pop up from it and stuff.
Yeah, and so it was, I think, Johnny P., our friend, Johnny Filipovich, who I don't know if he's been on this podcast or not, J.R. Goldberg from Voices of Wrestling, and Stephen Graham were on the Royal Rumble, and the topic of the star ratings came up, and it was funny because J.R. Goldberg said a very similar point to what I had made on Burning Spirits when I was over there, about that the star rating system is, the wrestling is skewed towards what Meltzer likes because the wrestlers know about Dave Meltzer and they're working matches based on what they know he gives high star ratings to. But the other part of it that he talked about is something that I also agree with. So it's really funny. I don't know J.R. Goldberg really at all, but it seems we have very similar opinions in that the reason why I have 9 over 4-star matches in this G1 is that I like to use the full 4 stars. I like to actually rate matches and not kind of every match has to be in the 3-star range to mean that it's good. I mean, to me, a 2-star match means that it's an average match. So above that means it's starting to get into being a good match. You know what I mean? It's not to say that it's great, but I think 3-star means it's great, and great is an important word to me. So I think that's part of it too, is that people have overflated with the star ratings. I mean, no one likes to even use anything below 3 stars at this point. It's just, it's kind of ridiculous.
Well, that is nuts. Yeah. I throw out plenty of 2s, under 2s. I try not to use negative because I think that's just being a shithead. I mean, you've got to really just fucking shit the bed for me to give you a negative match.
Right.
And it's not only that the wrestlers know what Dave's looking for, it's like they grew up as fans of reading him. And when they're fans of wrestling, and when they broke into wrestling, I'm sure they wanted to have 5-star matches rated by Dave Meltzer. And they work a style that Dave likes, which is the All Japan, and now it's a New Japan style, high flying, a crowd cheering it on. I mean, it's almost like, that's been a talking point for the last few years, is how Dave is, he's always had an influence on the business, but now I think he even has a greater influence when it comes to workers, because people are working their matches about how Dave likes them, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly it. And it affects his enjoyment. It affects his star ratings. That's why he's so far above 5 stars at this point, because so many matches are almost tailor-made for him. And it is creating that paradigm where people now don't take him seriously, but they have to understand that it's like you talked about the consensus opinion is Dave and his friends who like the same kind of wrestling as him, and that's why he accepts their opinions, because that's another thing that I think Dave should do a better job of, because he says stuff like, people in the building are telling me it's 4-star from a trusted star rater, and I remember people ran with that like it was a really funny thing for him to have said, but what he means by that is, this is a star rater who I feel my opinion is in line with. He's not saying, this is a star rater who I feel is correct. You know what I mean?
Which was the flaw for all of us. Like, I'm sure, you know, people who listen to podcasts usually listen to people they normally would agree with, as opposed to listening to somebody who just contradicts everything you stand for in wrestling. I mean, you listen to a lot more podcasts than I do. Do you listen to more that agree with you, or you see or share an opinion with, or ones that you just think are go off the reservation?
Well, I'm probably a unique situation because I do the kind of the latter, even when it comes to like politics and social issues. Like, I listen to libertarian podcasts, even though I consider myself a socialist. I listen to right-leaning podcasts, even though I consider myself pretty liberal. So I do listen to podcasts where I know that the commentators are going to say things that I strongly disagree with intentionally, because I do not think that's the norm. I think most people do the opposite. I think that I'm a major outlier in that regard.
And it's not even podcasts. I mean, it's like you usually hang out with people you have interest in. I mean, that's why you're friends, you know, and not enemies. You don't hang out with people you don't like or don't have anything in common with, because there's no reason for that, because that's, you wouldn't have anything to talk about or interact with. So, and I think that goes with wrestling. You usually gravitate towards tastes of what you see in wrestling and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, off that rant. Not rant, but off that just wackiness. We look at, yeah, well, the last thing I saw was Dave, I think, listed his top 10 MVPs of the G1, and Juice Robinson wasn't even in the top 10.
Oh, God.
And so that shows how off base, what a disconnect I have with Dave Meltzer, and I believe you have too, right?
Yes.
We both had Juice in there. I know, I think I had Juice as my number one guy.
Yeah, if you don't have Juice in your top three, then me and you just see wrestling completely differently, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. And value different things. So, speaking of Juice, we night 17, he opened up with Mike Elgin. And I liked the match. I gave it 3.5 stars. Elgin's power bomb on the apron was nasty. Juice is really good with those great punches. Great. He had like a lot of great hope punches where he was actually building some of his hope spots around punches, which I thought was kind of interesting. And yeah, he totally works like an 80s style baby face. And Elgin's a good worker too. And these guys just had a really good match. What'd you make of it?
I think I'm probably in the same camp as you, but at the time I was let down. So I gave it a 3-star rating, but thinking about the match, that's probably unfair. Because I felt that both of these guys really were working this as an exhibition. They made it very clear that they're both out of the tournament, which is fair, but it kind of extended itself even to the point where Juice really had dropped the knee selling storyline yeah. that he had for the entire tournament. So that kind of affected it for me. But as you talked about, the action was great. I felt that they both kind of checked out of the G1 narratives, which is fine because, as you said, Juice Robinson is a very good babyface, and he's not going to get to continuously do the same knee-selling storyline forever. So this is what his matches are going to be more like match to match, and he did a very good job here. I think if I was more fair, I probably would be 3.25, 3.5, but because of, like I said, being let down in the moment, I gave it 3 stars.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about the leg selling at that point. I think I was just looking down the stretch, like, hey, we're almost done with this damn thing. Because it really is it's a hard burnout of watching it constantly, especially knowing you have, like, deadlines of doing podcasts. So you really just can't wait. You just can't fall behind. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, whenever I would, and this is something to talk about, because I think people who don't do stuff like this maybe don't think about it. But if I ever let myself get behind more than 2 days, it turns into dread. Like, you just feel so bad, like, the idea that you're going to have to catch up on more than 10 matches.
Coming back from Scenic City, that's exactly how I felt. I was like, fuck, I have 3 G1s I'm behind. And, you know, I mean, that's a big chunk. That's 6 to 7 hours of wrestling you're behind on. And you better catch up quicker. If you fall even more behind, you can just fuck yourself.
Exactly.
You know? Oh, man. Next up was Sonata versus Tama Tonga. What you make of this?
These guys are really almost kind of mirror images in a lot of ways to me. They have good speed, good athleticism, and that's all this match really was. Yep. Tama gets the edge early on. He tries the Paradise Lock, but can't get it locked in on Sonata. So then he ends up getting locked in and on the floor himself. I like the Bullet Club coming in. They don't know how to unlock it, so they have to just kick him and they feel bad. But yeah, there's a lot of back and forth, but this is my problem with both of these guys. It's athleticism. It's amazing athleticism, honestly, because these are two big dudes and you forget it when you watch them work. They seem so much smaller than they really are, but there's no drama. There's no real heat. I like Loa coming in. He takes off Sonata's head with a clothesline that looked really good. And then there, you know, there's the back and forth looking for their signature spots and all this, but as I said, I like the action, but I didn't get invested in the match. 2.75 star. And if I'm calling the match before this feeling exhibition-y, this is even worse in that regard.
Yeah, I'm with you. I gave it 2.75 also, and I totally agree. It was a fun, athletic match. And that's one thing. Like, I don't think just because you're a great athlete doesn't make you a great worker. It just gives you more tools to be able to play with. But if you don't know how to structure it, when to do it, how to do it, why you're doing it, it doesn't make you a better worker. That's why a lot of people back in the 80s, They mentioned how they wish they would have the experience they had when they were younger, when their body could do more stuff, when they wish they understood the psychology of why and when they're doing stuff. And here, again, that's, I think, just what it was, because I'm not saying they didn't have any psychology or storytelling, but most of the storytelling was built around their big athletic hossiness and high spots for those guys those size. But there's a lot of people who think great athlete equals great worker, and I think that's the farthest thing from the truth. Then we got Yano versus Suzuki. I mean, come on, you know exactly what it was. The best part about this was Suzuki attacking all. I mean, he loses. He attacks all the New Japan young boys wearing their white shirts. It was almost like a bad Star Trek episode of, like, Suzuki's attacking all the red shirts. And the New Japan, because in Star Trek lore, the red shirts would always get, they were like, you know, they were nobodies, but they would always beam down to the planet with Captain Kirk and die. And here with the young boys, that's what it felt like with Suzuki, was just going to town on the red shirts, but they were wearing white shirts. that was about it. But what'd you make of it?
Yeah, similar feeling. I think Suzuki can be really good as the straight man in a comedy match, but I mean, this is like nowhere near Suzuki's best comedy match, obviously. You know, it's like, yeah. It's fine. I do worry that, Don Callis, I was thinking Cyrus, but Don Callis, he's got a little bit of that. He has to show off that he's really smart thing because he knows what's going to happen. Because before the match starts, he's even teasing Rocky Romero, you know, getting in the ring and, oh, you're a commentator tonight, no messing. And I'm kind of like that, you know, once you see it now happen, you're like, oh, you had to show, oh, I know that Rocky's going to get involved in the match. And it's just that kind of stuff can just kind of start to really get annoying.
So very grating and very like, what the fuck? Yeah, that's not your job. Your job is the call it, not to predict and then fucking be right about it, to make yourself look smart, you asshole.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I've heard people kind of complain about Gorilla Monsoon doing stuff like that as well, and I just worry. I hope that he doesn't get really bad about this and he tones it back, because I actually really like him. That said, 2 stars for the match. I thought it was fine.
What'd you make of Evil and Kojima?
I really enjoyed this match. I think it was a really strong fight from Evil. I think that it's really interesting having him, you know, go over strong here with Kojima, which is good. Obviously, they're into pushing him forward, which is nice. I felt that, yeah, Kojima's fiery comebacks were good. Cutoffs from Evil were fantastic. I think Evil, a lot of times, showing off his strength and even taking stuff like DDT on the apron and coming back in afterwards. And yeah, I thought that they did a really good job here helping build Evil moving forward. I gave the match 3.25 stars.
Yeah, I went 3.5, and I liked Evil working the neck. And Kojima with that nasty apron DDT was really nice. And the crowd was totally into it, which helps. It really helped Evil's status, you know. And I think coming out of the G1, he did really well, Evil. I enjoy the chair spot around the neck every now and then, but every match he gets grating and old, and it's like, dude, it would be a little better if he was a little creative in hiding it, and he's really not that creative when it comes to hiding the spot. It just almost like become like his token spot, but like a great worker would come up with ways to do it behind the ref's back, or come up with different ways where the audience didn't know when it was coming. But here he is a spot that's over. But I just don't know. I just don't think he properly knows how to protect it, or properly knows how to execute it to make it even more over, or make more sense out of it. What do you think of that chair spot? I know we talked about it a little bit on a show or two ago.
Yeah, I agree with you for the most part. I think he overdoes it a lot. I think he was better in this year's G1 than he has been at other times. It was like,
oh yeah,
there was matches where it wasn't happening every time, but. And I do like when he switches it up, because he has different kind of chair shot attacks that he uses at times. So I do like when he uses it based on his focus. The one where he puts it around their neck, he'll do if he's working over the neck. But he also has, I think he's done ones on the arm and the leg and different body parts and stuff. So I think he mixes it up enough, but I think he should probably calm down on it a bit more.
Yeah, it's almost become like a trope as opposed to a spot, because it's hard to be a spot, you know? It's kind of like Sabu. We always knew he was going through a fucking table. and where it almost it made some of the spots anticlimactic because you're waiting for that spot because it always got a big pop.
Yeah, it lessens the pop and it lessens the importance when it turns into this is just the thing that he does. It
yeah.
It almost becomes like a taunt, like a signature pose or a taunt, rather than what it should be, which is a devastating move.
Yep. All right, and then we get Okada. This was my favorite match between the two of them. Kenny Omega said it was his favorite match between the two of them. Probably because Kenny, you know, won. So, I mean, he has that thing in sort of bias going. I saw a lot of people threw the big 5 stars on this. I did not. I went 4 3/4. I thought it had 2 flaws really to it. Was from a storytelling perspective, where one, I thought Omega took too much of the match. And two, there was that spot where Okada hits the Rainmaker. He falls and crumbles on desperation. But then Omega immediately goes back on offense. And I felt that was a whole, I felt that was really shit-canning the Rainmaker, one. And then the other thing is V triggers look great every single time. But if you do them 20 times in a match, then they then become so... They become impotent in a way, you know. Even though how great they look, if you freaking look like you're murdering somebody with the move, and you never get a pinfall out of it, or hardly ever get a pinfall out of it, never in the big match, it kind of loses its luster. But I mean, I really liked Okada early selling the neck, big barricade bump by Okada, which I liked. I liked Omega going after Okada's neck, especially that low-level dropkick. Loved the neck vice by Omega. The crowd, and we get to see him also use that neck crank, allows the crowd to rally behind Omega, which I mean, around Okada. Loved the forearms to the neck by Omega. Just real basic stuff. You know, maybe this is why I like the match so much, because it felt like Omega kind of stripped down a lot of the stuff that I don't really like sometimes about him when he's so over the top, and he really kept a tight narrative here. Whenever Okada looked like he'd be making a comeback, Omega would cut it off by going to the neck, so just really good storytelling. Again, that loved Okada's desperation Rainmaker, because not only is it a finisher where you can use, and he, you know it's coming, but it's also a move he can nail coming out of nowhere, and it's awesome. But I didn't like Omega's comeback. I thought it was way too quick after the two Rainmakers. Like, you'd think Omega should have been selling death, even if they were two, even if he didn't hit him with 2 full Rainmakers. It's the fucking Rainmaker. It should be a little bit more respected. Put it over a lot stronger, and I felt it was a major mistake for Omega to go transition to offense right after the two Rainmakers. I thought he used the V-trigger way too many times, to where it was like, his V-trigger was almost, he used a V-trigger more than most people use a punch or forearm in a match. I mean, it's brutal looking, it looks sick as hell, but it's an impotent move, because he's used it so often, where it becomes, oh, great, the V-trigger. Where, I mean, honestly, you should never buy it as a pinfall, as a fan. The other thing I really enjoyed in the match was I liked that Okada used his dropkick as a weapon. And a lot of times you feel like Okada kind of uses that dropkick just for a pop. Here, it was to strive off Omega, or to keep Omega from advancing, and I really liked that narrative in the match. But I got 4 3/4, and I really liked it. I think I might have liked it. I thought it might have been my favorite of the three of the trilogy. It doesn't have like the grand storytelling of an hour draw, because it's like an hour draw, but you kind of say, and you kind of sense where this is going. But it was still a hell of a match. Well, what'd you make of it?
I think I'm pretty much with you on a lot of that. I give 4.5. I think the issue with the V-trigger is that it is meant to be just his signature strike, I think, at this point. And so it just looks too good for that. So I agree with you that, like, it looks like it should be sold more in a killer move, but it's not used that way by Omega. I thought that there was some really just nasty neck work with those apron bumps, like the dragon suplex and the cross leg buster was fucking deadly. And it's funny.
It's almost like, dude. I mean, I don't even know how safe that fucking shit is. I mean, I know it's their body and whatnot, but you could easily tell a story doing something a little differently because that's fucking some dangerous shit. That's could be a crippling bump, but I mean, it was still wicked as hell.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that came right after commentary is talking about Kenny being a sportsman and he throws the trainers off and he attacks with this nasty move. So I think they did a good job telling that story, and actually the commentary there really added to it in that regard. Omega's hitting the rising knee strikes. That this is something I mentioned on the last podcast. It felt reminiscent of the knee strike that Ibushi's been using as his finish there. So I think that was almost a subtle call out with Omega doing that and kind of hearkening back to those two. I'm really interested to see where they go with these two, Omega and Ibushi, coming, you know, out of this. I loved Omega. Even I talk about that V trigger being his signature knee strike, but here he shows some viciousness as, you know, in between attacks when Okada's trying to come back, he's just throwing hammer fists to the back of the neck. After that, just like the brutal work, and it's just such a great kind of, I guess, juxtaposition between the idea that he's doing stuff like big, you know, missile drop kicks to the neck, dragon suplex to the neck, and then things just as rudimentary as just a hammer fist to the back of the neck, because he's just going after the neck in all different ways. I kind of hate that Kreutz Wrath is treated as just like a nothing move. I really wish that it was like the super finisher for Omega, because the One Wing Angel gets kicked out here and there, but not much. But the Kreutz Wrath, he only breaks out every now and then. But breaking it out, going out of your way to break it out just to have it be, you know, a false finish every time just seems so pointless to me. And then coming out of that, I think it's really interesting. This is, I think, this is the first of two times that Kenny uses the Dre Driller in the tournament, which I'm wondering why he's doing that. But like I said, 3.5, I agree with you, there's some issues.
Wait, 3.5 or 4.5?
4.5, I'm sorry, 4.5. I agree with you that there's some big-time issues. I don't necessarily think this is my favorite of their matches. I liked the pace that they cut throughout, telling the story that they wanted to try to get this over with within the 30 minutes, and that Kenny Omega had to, you know, really work hard to be able to do that. And I think it's a good story to tell and continue to tell with 2 years in a row, Kenny making it into the finals and being the guy who has his match before the finals be on the night right before, in that he's becoming this kind of marathon man and the guy who, you know, he looks the best after a long tournament. He is able to have back-to-back big-time match nights. The guy who can just go and go and go, and I kind of like that. They should really play that up in his gimmick for the company overall.
Yeah, and then we go right to the final night, and for the G1 Championship, it's Naito versus Omega. What were your thoughts here? I mean, here's another one that got a lot of five-star praise, you know?
So this one was really kind of hard for me to grade, kind of hard for me to really conceptualize. There's a lot of great stuff here. I like the beginning with them playing off the characters. I even like Naito kind of zigging when Omega expects him to zag, and Kenny thinks he's just going to do his little pose in the middle of the ring, but he actually comes at him with a suicide dive. Kind of catching him off guard. I really enjoyed that little spot. And then that sets up this nasty pile driver on the table into the guardrail. But I felt like Kenny was then in control again, right after the Omega match, you'd say this, or right after the Okada match, the same thing. It felt like Kenny was back in control of the match way too fast after getting pile driven through a table. Or, you know,
it wasn't even through the, yeah, it was even worse because it was such an unprotected bump. I don't mean to interrupt you here, please. But yeah, I'm like that move should be used as a fucking injury angle. I mean,
yeah,
I was like, fuck. Again, it's like, you know, like I mean, he had some big spots like the dragon in the last match, but there was so much stuff that was stripped down and just nasty basic stuff. And here, it felt they were just over the top. Trying to top the Okada match, and instead of trying to work it smarter, he just went all out with big fucking bombs and moves. And again, I'm sure a lot of the kids ate it up, but there was that doesn't make it great wrestling by the amount of dangerous moves you're willing to do. And that table spot is a prime example. I think you ruined it for anybody. I mean, fuck, that thing used to put Ric Flair out for fucking all summer. And here it's used as a damn transition move.
Yeah, I mean, it really feels that way. I mean, it's not even a transition. It's like, it's the move that sets up Kenny Omega getting his transition into being in control right afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't get it. It's how did he take a pile driver and then comes back to be in control? But yeah, that it seems like they came up with some really great ideas in this match. This one, and then there's another one, and they didn't capitalize on that. But I'm just, it comes back to, we talk about Kenny, and I'm a huge fan of him, and I talk about his creativity and all this stuff all these years, but I feel like sometimes he's outrunning himself. He's very creative. He's a very special wrestler, but he doesn't get the most out of everything that he can, and this really showed it here. Coming out of that, there's another spot. I mean, Naito's setting him up for the big superplex to the floor. Kenny slips back and DDTs Naito into the post.
Yes.
And in my head, I'm like, Naito's going to come back just covered in blood. He's just going to be pouring blood. His face is just going to be, you know, crimson mask, as they say. It's going to be ridiculous. And then the next thing you know, Naito's hitting a super Rana, countering a super bomb. And it's just like, what the fuck? So then I'm like, well, it's a good thing he didn't blade, because if he had, it would make no sense now that he's just in control instantly afterwards. And it's the exact same issue. It's that they came up with this really cool idea, but I don't know that they understood just how insane it's going to look, and that these things are special, and the reason why you came up with them and you're so intelligent and you come up with these great ideas is that you're going to be the only one who's ever come up with this, so make it important. Make it a big deal. Make it a memorable moment. And I think it still is. I audibly gasped. I had to watch it a second time. I like, what the fuck happened there? Because that DDT on the post was nasty.
It was.
And I was scared. I was legitimately scared that Naito got hurt and then he's instantly fine. And I'm just like, God, I get the idea that you're going to get that, oh, this big pop, oh, he's okay. But I think you get more from it having him come back. That should have been his kick out. That shouldn't have been his super Rana. He should have taken the super bomb and then somehow been able to kick out. And then that's the big pop.
That's his fighting spirit. Yeah. Not the fact that he's able. Yeah. Fuck. Yeah. God.
Yep. Yeah. That said, I mean, these are my two big, and I think for other people, these are the big spots that make this a 5-star match. But to me, these are the big two spots that make it a 4-star match.
Yep.
Because I loved them and I thought that they were cool spots, but they should have been more, and they weren't. They were thrown away to just be, again, like you said, transition moves, and it's fucking sad. The finish was amazing. These guys are so great with their back and forth. They're doing exactly the kind of hot finishing stretch that you expect from New Japan at this point. But I really think that they missed the mark on a few things here, and as I said, this was a tough match for me to grade because I really enjoyed it, but I gave it 4 stars. It was very, very good, but nothing in this is going to really stand the test of time in my memory as an all-time great match because they didn't capitalize as well as they could have.
I'm with you. I gave it 4 stars too. It had a big time atmosphere. I really liked the one thing I really loved was Naito with that sick looking neck breaker off the apron to the floor. I thought that looked great. Like we took the pile driver off the table and then he comes back. I mean, that's just an example of too much too soon, you know, over the top, way excessive. Naito, at this point, his finisher has been fucking shit, been fucking flushed down the toilet. So Naito is a man with no finishers at this fucking point. And Omega is kicking out of fucking everything on down the stretch. So Naito at this point has nothing going for him to finish off an opponent. I thought the finish run was, I thought it was full of finisher killing spam. But I did like a lot of the body of the match, and it was a spectacle, but man, it was just way excessive and over the top for me. 4 stars. I mean, excessive. And I think just because the cake is full, is rich and very filling, doesn't make it a great cake. It still could be dry. It might not be moist enough. I mean, here, just because there's a lot of excess to it, doesn't make it great. I mean, I think that's the thing that can get on two different sides of the coin, where excess can really hurt a match, and I felt the match was hurt by those spots and how they were handled. It wasn't even the spots per se, but more of how they were handled and how they were positioned, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that last year, Kenny did a really good job with the Naito match being the setup to the final with Goto. This year, I think that, I don't know, I think he had a similar thing where I feel like the semifinal for Kenny outshined the final in a lot of ways.
Fair enough. Why don't we take a break here, and when we come back, we'll look at CWF and NXT, brother.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. And we're back. We're looking at CWF right off the bat. And, man, I got to tell you, October 13th, 14th, CWF Fan Fest. Follow Johnny P on Twitter. Follow Jeremy on Twitter. JB on Twitter. They're freaking there. It has all the itinerary and stuff. We'll have a link to the notes. I'll be out there, man. Come out, have a blast. Meet fans, meet the hardcores, meet the fans, meet the local of CWF. We'll have a great time, great time to be have. And man, if any indication of the shows I've been putting on, expect another hell of a great show. And that's what I'm looking forward to. So be there, be square, baby. Man, opening match on this week's CWF Mid Atlantic. Ethan Sharp versus Lucas Calhoun. And you know what? I thought this pairing really intrigued me. I consider both guys gimmicks in a way where, you know, we have Richie Rich, we have Elvis. And I'm all for keeping, like, when you have gimmicks, I like putting gimmicks together. And so this match worked for me on that level. Ethan Sharp's stash is reaching epic status. But I thought they had a really smart, fun match. And the funniest part was the finish, which was about as un-gimmicked as possible, was Ethan Sharp just hitting a punch, straight punch, and pinning Calhoun. I really enjoyed the match. I thought it was a lot of fun. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that CWF is doing a great job of really legitimizing Ethan Sharp. And as you talk about it being two gimmicks, I think that they really did a great job here, where it's the two gimmicks, but then it got serious, so it helped you buy into both of them by the end. It feels like they're definitely pushing Sharp as a big-time striker here, coming out with a lariat and the big uppercut for the win. And I've been saying it kind of the whole time that I think every now and then he catches a really nice-looking shot, a nice uppercut, and it looks really believable. So using that as his finish here, I think, is a really great choice. And he's starting to feel like a contender. I don't think he's ready to win the, you know, the Weaver Cup this year, but he's looking like someone who could do it down the line now.
Agreed. Totally agreed. And then we got Coleman and Lockhart promo. Any thoughts on here? I didn't think it was amazing or anything. I thought it was solid stuff. What about you?
Yeah, I liked it. I think Coleman's a really polished promo, and I liked Lockhart tagging, like kind of locking it out in the end with kind of their tagline. So I thought it was good. I think this is a really good act. I think that they work well together.
Yeah, so do I. And then we got Chet Sterling versus Aaron Epic. Well, what were your thoughts here?
Interesting kind of placement. They did a good job because I think that it's pretty clear that the story of the match is Chet Sterling is trying to get his hands on LaRue, so you expect that his story in the tournament is going to be important. But you put this match after that last match where it feels really like CWF could do any kind of upset-type situation, because I think Ethan Sharp getting really any win is looked at as slightly upset, so I think that was a good job. It really puts it into the crowd's minds that Chet could lose here, because they're making it clear that CWF will book almost anything. You can't expect what you're going to get out of CWF, because they can make almost anything work. The action itself I thought was good. Chet opens up. He's trying to beat Epic on the mat at his own game. I love commentary putting that over. When it's clear that that's not going to happen, he starts peeling off some high-flying, fast-paced action. I like Epic starting to work over the neck and choking, using the ropes and being a dick, Aspen helping him cheat. Chet's comebacks are fiery, and the crowd always gets super behind him. He's got big dynamic spots, and everyone's into it. The Death Valley Driver in the corner I thought was a great near fall that everyone could buy into big time, and it starts making the match feel like a big deal when he kicks out on that. And then the weird distraction finish that ends up biting Epic in the ass as he gets jackknife pinned was, I mean, a good, solid babyface finish that gives you, you know, Chet Sterling got a clean win, but it also felt like it could have gone either way. So it didn't necessarily give away the match, even though it completely did. It actually feels like a match that you could go back to at some point and people would be intrigued to see it again, which is a really smart booking when you're in a tournament format like this to not just burn through these matches and make them all feel like, oh, well, I've already seen that now because it happened in the tournament. I actually feel like, oh, I could watch that again. So I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I liked it too, man. I liked the early shine by Chet, and I love the spot that set up the heat for Epic. I like the heat focused on Chet's neck. Love the near fall of the Death Valley Driver on the corner, into the corner. I thought that was nasty. And I absolutely loved the payoff off the pile driver from the previous match with Aaron Epic. So, I mean, they told a story in the match and still a total grander story when it comes to the tournament and stuff. And the pile driver, nice, good, tidy 3.5-star match. I really liked it. Then we got a promo. What'd you make of the promo?
This one did nothing really for me. I mean, it's fine. It's good to get them out there at least somewhat, because I think that they're kind of unknowns for the company, but I wasn't super into it.
Agreed. And then we got Alex Daniel versus Smith Garrett, and let me tell you, I just was wowed at the finish. Couldn't believe they went there with Smith Garrett winning within seconds of starting. Because I didn't think they would do that to Daniels. But I liked Logan East and LaRue coming out, and I thought it was a fun angle to set up Daniels and LaRue, and you kind of forget about Daniels getting jobbed out so quickly because the crowd just hates LaRue, so they're all behind Daniels. It was like the weirdest way to help get him over even more, but it worked, you know?
Yeah, and you know what I think makes it work is that for me going into this match, I thought this was going to be a hard-fought kind of pick-em match. I mean... I felt like Daniels is on his way up. He really could use the win, but I felt like Smith Garrett is pretty well protected in CWF. He doesn't take a lot of losses. So going into it, I'm like, oh, this is going to be exciting. I wonder where they're going to go. And because it was such this quick kind of out of nowhere goes against your expectations, I really feel like it didn't even have a chance to sink in before they had moved on to the next thing. You give Daniels that kind of visual pinfall with him counting his own pin. And like you said, I think that it really, you gloss over it. It's just a blink of an eye, almost like it didn't happen. So I think they did a really good job of helping keep protecting Daniels, but also moving forward the storyline this way.
Yeah, but I mean, backstage, if someone presented this angle to me, I'd be like, I don't know, man.
Right.
This doesn't sound good. But it worked. You know, that's what I'm saying. Is like, on paper, it sounds like a fucking disaster for Daniels. But it actually worked, and he comes out as a bigger potential babyface out of it. And I totally liked it. Logan East and LaRue, I'm all in on as a heel, just good stuff.
You know what is weird about it is that it just made me think it almost feels like the really bad WWE trope where they say like, oh, well, if they're turning, then they can lose a bunch because it won't matter once they turn. And it felt like the epitome of like showing you that like, that is correct if you know what you're doing. And it's exactly what they did. Like, he instantly just lost a match in 2 seconds as a heel. But because he turned babyface a second after, it, like, didn't matter at all. And it's just so impressive the way that they were able to show, like, no, this is how you do this.
Totally agree. Then we get CL Party, who I really think doesn't get enough credit as being one of the better ring announcers. She comes across real pleasant, like real likable personality. I mean, if you're watching and you don't react to her in a positive, like, aw, like, you know, like you're happy to see her, then you have a black heart, you know? I mean, cause she comes across as really, really genuine and nice. I love when she starts interviewing Snooty and Eric Royal is out to get heat. I love the fact he's wearing a Trevor Lee shirt. It's such old school, swarmy, easy thing to do to get heat, but people just don't do it ever, you know? You sure hell don't see it on WWE television, but I mean, this harkens back to Greg Valentine wearing the I Broke Wahoo shirt, leg, or Gino Hernandez, I Shaved Jose Bald, or Don Carnoodle wearing the date of the, I mean, there's so many shirts that they'd make at the mall with letter printing, they'd make themselves, and they're like the best. And here he actually uses a real Trevor Lee shirt, but he gets to put it on the brain about his feud with Lee, and it just adds a whole another element because the heel's wearing like the top babyface's shirt in the promotion, which of course the fans just want to rip it off of him. I thought it was fantastic. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you on CL Party. I think the reason why she gets overlooked is because she's, I hate to say it, but she comes across so plain Jane girl next door that the reason why she works is that she doesn't stand out. And she just comes across legitimate and, as you said, likable, sweet and all that. So it's great. And then I liked Snooty Fox. He feels like that low-key athlete who's real respectable. He's laid back, but once he gets fired up, that's why he's a ball of energy in the ring. So then you instantly have like it's almost like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing in him, but then you turn around and you have the actual Mr. Hyde as Eric Royal comes out, and he's the opposite. He's the big loud mouth, just talking all this shit. Like you talk about pulling out that shirt. He's wearing the Trevor Lee shirt as he's just kind of being dismissive towards Snooty Fox. He's calling out the big guy, the big dog on campus with Trevor Lee. And it's just, I actually thought that this was done so well. And a big part of it was the characters involved, as you say. Like, they picked the right guys to interact with each other here to make it perfect.
Yeah, and then we have the Lee comes out for the save because they are beating down Snooty Fox. And Otto Swan's attacks, which just sets up Lee versus Swans. I mean, I thought it was a nice little angle, and now we get a payoff to it with the match. What'd you make of the match?
These guys, I think this is going to be underrated by a lot of people in general, this match. I think it's going to be overlooked by people who don't understand how good Otto really is because they don't pay attention to CWF, but these guys have amazing chemistry together. Trevor is just such a fantastic selling. Otto Swans' offense all looks credible. He plays this character. He's perfect. I mean, all of his spots look so good. He's all over Trevor the whole way. Trevor's selling his ass off. And, like, we talked about the drama earlier from G1 matches. I mean, this smoked so many G1 matches for drama. And it's like, I think if you're just on the outside looking in and you're not bought into these characters, you probably think this is some throwaway bullshit match with a local guy who doesn't matter. But you don't know the history of Otto Swans. I mean, the guy, he got chances here and there. He's worked in, you know, I know ECW. He worked some other places as well. He just kind of always got overlooked. I don't know if maybe it's just that he had other life things. He didn't commit himself to the business as much as he could have, but he's a guy that was always on that cusp who probably could have been bigger than he was because he's got all the talent that he needs. From there, I mean, yeah, the history between the two, the last match, Trevor didn't actually beat Otto, so you got that looming in the back of your head that Trevor could lose here. Trevor is so great at, he's somehow simultaneously the most undefeated man in the company, but he's also the most, like, how do I put it? Like, the most, like, always on the edge. He seems like he's always got a chance of losing, and but yet he always wins. It's like, it's that John Cena, Super Cena thing, but somehow Trevor makes it actually work where you, like, buy into him as the underdog who always wins. I love Otto breaking free of the SGF, and they really put it over that he's just this freak of nature, that he's able to just break out on his own, goes into the big bear hug. And eventually, Trevor is able to put him away with a really nasty-looking, cranked-over STF. But yeah, I really enjoyed this match, and it's just another feather in the cap for this Trevor Lee title run that's been going so amazingly.
Did he give it a star rating at all?
I would probably give this like 4 stars, honestly. Three and a quarter, four star.
Yeah, I went 4 and a quarter. I like Coach getting kicked to the back, so we got it one on one. Awesome match. Lee is like in total steamboat mode, just selling his ass off and getting Otto over as the monster. Otto kind of reminded me of like 1985 Nikita, where he's like this just monster destroying people. And that's my Nikita impersonation. And then we see I actually lost my shit when Lee took that 360 bump off Otto's clothesline. I thought that was incredible. Otto destroying the match's destruction, but man, great finish, just total. And the match is built around Trevor Lee selling and again showing how to get a guy over. It was just incredible. Then we get a Kane and Movie Mike promo. This could be interesting. What about you?
Yeah, I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yeah. Then we get the Dawsons versus Coleman and Lockhart. And I can buy, it's weird, and I don't mean to sound racist, but I can totally buy the Dawsons as like this militant, anti-pro-South type of team. And facing African Americans, it just was really glaring. Which it really shouldn't matter. But for some reason, I thought it helped Matt made the heat a little bit more interesting. I liked the heat of the Dawsons, liked the Dawsons working Lockhart over in the corner. We get the "This is awesome" chant, and immediately Johnny P takes them off his invite list to CWF Mid Atlantic Fan Fest. So take that, you guys. I love the double pin idea, and I thought they were going to go in a different direction, but I enjoyed the double pin idea, and as a way to try to keep both teams fresh, but the heels still end up going over because on like kind of a sneak attack. So I like it because it made both teams, and I thought this helped might hopefully extend the feud between them. What'd you make of this?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. With the kind of political climate right now, they do look like the Dawsons, you could believe, are part of one of these militia groups that are showing up at some of these rallies and maybe protecting free speech, as they say. And unfortunately, they're not protecting the free speech of guys like the Vanguard. So it does work out that way. I've had some conversations with people, specifically QT, Quentin Moody from Wrestling With Words, that he has issues with the Vanguard and Darius Lockhart in particular kind of being treated as a heel in some places. I personally think that Darius Lockhart does a really good job of really playing, and someone to liken it to would be like a CM Punk, where he doesn't bastardize his morals to play the heel character. He just plays it as a kind of overbearing character. So he's still, in some ways, you can still see that he's right. You just wish he wasn't so smug about it. You can't control the crowd reaction, which is probably the more upsetting thing at sometimes when the crowds are a little bit hostile towards him in a way that you feel is not necessarily just about a wrestling heat thing. But you know, that's not really what this show is about. We'll save that for Tom Batista over on the Military Industrial Suplex. But the match itself, I thought the Vanguard looked insanely great together. Smooth double team spots, really kept, you know, keeping up with each other. Caprice Coleman, again, as I said before, previously on other podcasts, really just an amazing talent who hasn't really gotten the appreciation and the chances he deserves. Darius Lockhart, I think in this setting with this character in this tag team, is really opening up to me as someone who's finally putting it all together. I thought he was very talented. I still think he's very talented, but I think that having a character that's based on himself, that feels like himself turned up, he's able to sink his teeth into, and it's really putting everything together. I don't know what the ceiling is on something like this, but I think, again, as I talked about CM Punk, I think people probably said the same thing about a straight edge wrestler early on. I don't know what the ceiling is for that. Who's really going to buy into it? Is that something that that they would want to put on TV? Well, I think, you know, you never know. It could work out. The match itself, I loved the finish. Keeps the Vanguard looking super strong, but the Dawsons come out with the title. Sets you up into wanting to see them get theirs. And I really thought that they did a great job debuting this team, or I guess having a second match with this team, but really debuting them as a functional unit, not just a surprise partner. And moving forward, I think that this could be a good way to, you know, move the titles from the Dawsons over to the Vanguard, and this could be some interesting storytelling moving forward, so I'm excited for it.
I totally agree. And it was another great show, you know, they really had some killer ones, huh?
Yeah, I mean, Jesus, this was a great episode. And the Weaver Cup, I think, is a really nice backdrop, but they've also got other stories percolating and brewing all around. And CWF, man, it's the best booked wrestling on the planet right now. It's really bar none. I don't know of too many companies that come close.
I totally agree, man. And remember, everyone, October 13th, 14th, CWF Fan Fest. Check it out over on follow Johnny P on Twitter, and you'll be able to get some fun, get some information. Let me see what JB's Twitter is off the top of my head. I just don't remember what it is. Yeah, check out at JBryant025 or 025. And get some details on the Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest. And let me get Johnny P's exact Twitter. At John Philip Pavage. So let me spell that for everybody. At capital J, lowercase O-H-N, capital P, lowercase H-I-L-A-P-A-B-A-G-E. That's at John Philip Pavage. It's going to be a great time. It's going to be a lot of fun wrestling. We're going to get plenty of interaction with the wrestlers. Getting discount rates on the hotels. Check it out. It's going to be a blast, folks. Why don't we move over to NXT? It opens up with Ember Moon versus Asuka contract signing. I think I've had enough contract signings on NXT. I mean, they do it almost too often now. Where I think last year they had one for Bayley and Sasha during Summers for their Brooklyn Takeover match. I know we've had it. Didn't we just have it for Robbie Roode and Drew McIntyre?
It was, yeah. I think that one was weird because I don't know if it was a.
Proper.
Yeah, it was a contract signing, but it felt like one, that's for sure.
I know we've had it with Samoa Joe and Finn Balor. I'm pretty sure we had it with Knack and Rude before, too.
Yeah.
It just seems like it's just getting stale. But NXT is such a territory wrestling, because, I mean, contract signings were a staple. We've seen these angles before with more. That's the thing, is we've seen it before with talent that's more over than Ember Moon. And Asuka's over, but no one believes she's going to lose. So I'll say Asuka is over during this, especially when she starts speaking Japanese. Ember, she's trying. I mean, she's trying, but I don't know. There's just something about her. She's just not connecting to the crowd. It might be because she has such a... I don't know. I don't know if it's a gimmick, but even though they're trying to soften the gimmick, but then the fact that she has funky eyes doesn't help with the, you know, the eye contacts. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. What'd you make of the whole thing?
I thought that Ember was good here, and I think that they did a good job of building up the match. I liked Asuka being kind of out of control towards the end, and she's just crazy and into it, and that really capped it off for me. But yeah, I feel like it's too predictable. Didn't really super stand out. But I'm slightly more excited for the match coming out of this than I was before, but that's not saying much because I'm just not super excited for this match. I even heard some people saying over on, the main event, which actually was the episode you were just on, but it wasn't when you were on the show, saying that they think that they could switch and have this be the main event of the Brooklyn Takeover, and I honestly think that that's kind of ridiculous.
That's nuts. If I was on that segment, I would have buried those guys saying that. Which one of those jokers said it?
I'm not sure. I can't say for sure. I think it was, I mean, it was Scott, Nate, and Glenn Butler all on it, but when I heard that, and I don't remember whose talking point it was, I was just kind of like, no, I don't think that it at all warrants being the main event. I don't care how down you are on Bobby Roode, which I know a good amount of people kind of are, and I don't understand why.
Yeah, I don't get it either, because he's a great champion. He's a heel champion. Maybe they're getting worked up so much. I don't know.
Right, and I just don't, but I don't see this match having anywhere near the buzz. Even if you just don't like Bobby Roode, I don't think that this match is just so much more buzzy. And going to be just so much better.
Yeah, that's nuts. Nuts. Okay. Then we get Regal with Sullivan, and he's looking for a tag partner. Why does he need a tag partner? He just beats him up. I mean,
I know.
Why does he need a tag partner? Why can't he just work with singles?
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
And then everyone's happy. His partner won't get beat up. Sullivan can then prove if he can win by himself. I just don't know. What you make of this?
Yeah, I agree with you. I guess I get they're trying to add some depth to Sullivan, but this wasn't, to me, this wasn't the way to do it. It didn't make any sense. I could have seen a lot of different ways to do this, but why is he begging for a partner, honestly? He should just be saying...
And why would anyone want to partner with him at this point?
Right? Why would Regal go along with it? I mean, this guy, he's... What has he done to be like, oh, I promise you, Regal? And he's like, well, you know what? You did such a good job babysitting my kids last week. I really do trust you now. Like, what? They haven't shown any character development why Regal buys into him promising that he won't do it. It should have... Honestly, to me, it should have been the opposite. It should have been Regal saying, no, you will go out there and partner with this guy, and... If you do anything this time, then you're fired or whatever. You know what I mean? But it didn't make any
sense. That's totally. Yeah, you presented it a much more angle that made sense.
I'm not into it. The match itself, I mean, I'm just going to say this, and I know that there's a bunch of people on, especially Wrestling With Words, that are super hyped for them, but I feel like the Street Profits hype is so, like, meme-orific that it's fucking, like, turning my stomach on them. They haven't done anything yet, and people are talking about them like they're this great tag team just because they like the stupid Snapchat gimmick. And as I said, it's like, it's getting to the point where it's turning me off because I'm like, why are you like stumping for these guys who've done nothing? But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, hell, I mean, I was on Twitter the other day, and like me and Devin Hales and Stephen Graham, I mean, me and Devin had no idea what the gimmick is. I thought it was street parlor trick guys. And so that's how out of touch I am. So I don't even understand the gimmick. And which is funny is I get a lot of the audience does understand the gimmick, but wrestling's been skewing older and older. So doing these type of gimmicks, I don't know if they understand it. I mean, take a guy like Papa Hales. I'm sure he pops for him because, you know, they're over. But Papa Hales getting up there, does he understand what this Snapchat shit is?
Well, Papa Hills might, because he's all over social media. I mean,
that's true. He is a social media darling. But his son,
star.
His son doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I think they're putting a little too much evidence in social media. I just don't get it. I don't understand it. We'll see. And I still have no idea where they're going with Lars Sullivan overall. I don't know what the end game is. I think he has an interesting look, but I mean, you can only beat up your tag partners for so long.
I mean,
Cactus Jack did it for a while in WCW, but I mean, that he ended up having to do something and ended up, you know, killing his body, but it became a star out of it. I don't think Lars Sullivan has the inkling that Mick Foley had, so I'm kind of curious on where they're going with it. I have no idea where they're going with him. Then we got Billy Kay versus Ruby Riott. What'd you make of this?
I don't know. Billy Kay looked good with some aggressiveness here. Her strikes looks better than they have before. A couple suplexes that didn't look as awkward as some of her stuff has looked before. I actually think Billy Kay is improving slightly. Surfboard stretch was fine. Ruby gets the finish out of nowhere. This is like, again, these matches where it's like the opposite of the squash, I guess. It's what you do with the babyface who's known for their selling, I guess. I don't know if it's common. I mean, it feels like a somewhat new paradigm in wrestling is that, like, rather than just doing a squash to show that, like, the only reason why she's this really good seller is because she's wrestling people that are really good, but instead what they do is, like, she gets beat up the whole time because she's good at selling and then hits a fluke and gets the win, and it just, to me, it doesn't really help you get over, honestly, but, you know, Peyton Royce cuts a post-match promo, and I guess this feud must continue.
I've been hearing people saying they think the Australian Mean Girls need to move up. I mean, bottom line is they're going to have the same flaws, which is they're not very, very good. They're not that engaging in ring, that they're great out ring. But I mean, great is even a strong word, but I find them entertaining out of the ring. But I don't think they have any legs on the main roster. Do you?
Not at the moment. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they're ready to be called up. I honestly don't think they are, especially because I do think that they're showing improvement. So I think they'd be better off waiting to call them up.
I don't know. At least at least on NXT they'll get week to week TV time, and they're over enough, you know. Then we get this Authors of Pain Ellering thingy, Bob. What you make of this?
I thought it was okay. Someone sent me a link recently, and there's a book on Amazon that's called Pain, and it says it's poems that are written by the authors of Pain. So that's pretty interesting. And this made me think about that.
Is it 80% off, like part of Shakespeare's book on Amazon?
Maybe. Let me see. Okay, so it's called Pain by the Authors of Pain, the debut poetry collection from the WWE tag team and literary powerhouse, the Authors of Pain. The Kindle price is $0, and it's down from a price of 99 cents, so it's definitely worth the buy, I think. So everyone go on there and grab that. I think it's probably a joke, but it says it's by Occam and Razor. But yeah, this promo just made me think about that.
Well, again, if anyone misses Parv, he's in one of his Shakespeare's book is 80% off on Amazon. So throw some ducats at Parv. Then we got Drew McIntyre versus Roddy Strong. You know, at first I'm looking at this. I don't know about you, but I'm looking at like this. I'm like, I wonder how they're going to book this because this is weird. Is McIntyre about to move up to the main roster? Is Strong? I think a lot of these things are going to – not Strong. I don't think Strong's going to – or, I mean, is Rude. If McIntyre loses, I guess that's a way of that's saying that Mac might be going up to the roster or Mac's taking it and Rude's going. So I had no idea where it's going, right? Obviously, they're all staying down on the damn NXT, but because they booked it like guys aren't leaving the area. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They kind of booked themselves into a corner, but this is the only outcome they could have done if everyone is staying on the roster. So that's what I felt like we got out of the booking of this. I was kind of disappointed. I mean, the match was good, don't get me wrong, but I think Roddy Strong was Drew McIntyre's best opponent on the indie scene. If not, at least in the top three. and I still thought it was good. Don't get me wrong, in the 3-star range, but it just never got into the next level. Maybe I was more thinking about all the booking here and all the repercussions of what could happen that I didn't engage myself into the match. But I mean, I still thought it was good though. Because all the strong stuff looks great. I thought McIntyre looked good, but I just never got to reaching epic status. But I did like the finish of how it protected everybody. Where'd you go, man?
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. I thought it was funny that Nigel starts it out really, he's speaking for us as he says, I don't really see what anyone has to gain from this match. Yeah. And that was kind of our talking point last week. I'm just like, thank you, Nigel. Thank you. He's like, I don't even know why this is happening. So yeah, I appreciated that from Nigel. And see, that's like kind of for me the opposite of what I was talking about with Don Callis earlier. It's like Nigel's speaking for the audience. He's being smart. He's, you know, he's Jesse Ventura. He's kind of turning wrestling tropes on their ear while being kind of heelish, but he's still staying. He's still playing. He's still playing within the reality of wrestling and not going, well, I know what's going to happen, so here's my prediction. He's kind of just making that work and go, oh, yeah, that's right, instead of like kind of trying to prove that he's smart. These guys kill each other from the start, and it really reminds me of their feud, as you talked about that he was one of McIntyre's best opponents on the indie scene. I mean, when McIntyre came back to the indies, that feud with Roderick Strong in Evolve really, I think, was the thing that gave a lot of people, like, who had reservations about Drew McIntyre, oh, who's this guy? They weren't paying attention to him in the Australian and Scottish scene before he came to WWE, so to them, he's just a WWE guy. Yeah,
totally legitimized him on the indie scene.
Exactly. It felt like Roddy Strong really lent his ability. I mean, don't get me wrong, McIntyre is good. He proved himself to be good. But Roddy Strong really lent his legitimacy on the indie scene to McIntyre and made him an accepted guy on the indies, because I think Roddy, when they talk about Mr. ROH and the gatekeeper and all this, I mean, I think that a lot of people really buy into that, or did buy into that, that he's not the top guy in the indies, but he was the benchmark on the indies. He was, you know, the guy who's going to turn it up and have a great match with everyone. If you can't keep up with him, then you probably don't belong on the indie scene in general, and I thought that it really did a good job. So then here, it almost feel in some ways like it was the opposite thing. It was McIntyre's being treated like a big deal and Roddy's kind of slumping back down. So he needed McIntyre to lend some of that credibility to him. And I think that they did a good job with the opening few minutes of this match of doing that. It felt like Roddy was on his level. It felt like this was a war going back and forth, and then cutting it off, as you said, protecting everyone and feeling like coming out of it. I mean, they don't say it, but could they throw Roddy into a three-way at Brooklyn? Probably not, but maybe. Could they make it a three-way at the next big show? You know what I mean? So there's a lot coming out of it where, like you said, it feels like something is continuing on, and it's going to be interesting to see what, but it does at the same time feel like, well, why did you have this match? Is it was really more of an angle, and it was not the stereotypical way that you want to go out leading into your biggest show of the year, I don't think, because it really was playing off of a third guy who's not necessarily in the main event, and it might affect the heat for the match if people are watching it waiting for Roddy to get involved somehow.
A very good point about the heat. Again, NXT feels like lately they've been kind of sputtering going into these specials, and I felt that here. What about you?
Yeah, that definitely. I think that you open up with the Ember Moon Asuka stuff, which in years past the women's title was at the level of being the main event, possibly. Doesn't feel like it here. I think you're trying to open strong with that. Then you've got filler in the middle that doesn't feel like it has anything to do with the big show. And then you cap off the show with a main event angle that doesn't necessarily, as I said, feel like it hypes you for the match, but hypes you more for all the nebulous parts that are going on around the match.
Totally. Okay, well, next week we'll be back and we'll be listening and we'll be reviewing the NXT TakeOver. Devin Hale said he'd probably be swinging by to join us on that review, so it'll be the three of us reviewing that next week. So we'll see how it comes up. So just to pull the curtain back, we're recording Saturday afternoon, and tonight is NXT TakeOver. So we'll be back next week to record to review that. On that note, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll look at some ACW from Powerbomb TV.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, man, we're back, and we're going to be reviewing ACW Hostile Environment from June 24th of this year. This is the ACW in Cornelia, Georgia, right?
Yes, this is ACW Cornelia. They've got a lot of history. Anarchy
with Wildside, yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of the successor to Wildside, which was the successor to a different NWA kind of legacy brand in that area. So yeah, they've been around for a long time. The guys like Xavier Woods from WWE and AJ Styles have both come out of kind of this region and this company. So they kind of got some history, but they're not, you know, I don't think they're on everybody's radar.
Yeah, and it was my first time seeing them in a long time. And I enjoyed the show overall. It was my first time watching something off Powerbomb TV, really. The one thing was the arena felt dark when you were watching things, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think the production wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. Some things were kind of hard to see.
Yeah, and I think maybe it was just dark or... I'm just not exactly sure, but I mean, definitely very watchable. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't like I was squinting or getting a headache watching the stuff. So.
Oh no, and it's only like I say, only hard to see for someone like me who's trying to take notes and you know, for the podcast. I think if you're just watching it for fun, it's easy watch.
Exactly, and we open up with Chase Jordan versus Jeremy Foster. I thought this was a fun, solid opener. What about you?
Yeah, I like Chase Jordan's kind of paint-by-numbers heel promo to open it out, calling out Foster and kind of getting the cheap heat on the crowd was fine. The match itself was good. Quick shine. Jordan using the rail to get the heat. So, I mean, this company is pretty dang old school with the way that they work it. I mean, the heels get heat off of cheating and just being dicks, and the crowd get into it. Like Foster with the flying, you know, kind of knee to get the victory here. Good opener. I gave it 2 stars. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I gave it 2 stars also. Then we got Brian Vega versus AJ Gray. What you make of this?
I think Vega, and this is probably kind of harsh, but I think Vega looked like kind of a trash bag wrestler, like from the Facebook. But it works with his scuzzy heel character, I think. In this match, Gray looked good. Nice hope spots, big dive to the floor. Vega kind of working, using gimmicks and trying to cheat, I thought was good. Liked the spinning tombstone and the Phoenix splash from Gray, who looks like he's got a lot of potential. Athletic, kind of upper medium sized guy. Cuts a promo afterwards telling Vega to apologize, and then somehow a dude shows up who's bigger than both of them but isn't a wrestler, I guess. Spears the shit out of Vega.
He's the announcer. the announcer.
Yeah, so
he's Jesus, yeah.
I'm like, why did you... That's a weird angle to put in there. You get the announcer who just towers over both wrestlers and puts one of the wrestlers down. But the match itself, I gave 2.25. Thought it was fine. I think Gray definitely looks like he could, you know, use some more experience, but definitely has some potential there.
Yeah, I gave it 1.34. I just couldn't get into Vega. I think maybe if we watch more, I might get into him, because if he feels more like a character than a worker, does that make sense?
Yes.
And Gray, I liked. I like that corkscrew moonsault was really sweet. I saw him work SUP when I was down there for the Scenic City, and he was one of the guys who really stood out to me. He's like, wow, this guy has a future. So I definitely want to see more AJ Gray, I'll tell you that. And then we get this Gray interview, which leads us into a promo by Kyle Matthews and a Anthony Henry promo, which was pretty good, huh?
Yeah, but I thought that Kyle's promo was better. I don't know about you.
I agree. I liked it. I just liked Henry's. I thought I liked him coming across heelish, so I thought I enjoyed the heel promo better.
Okay. I felt like Kyle came across a little bit more natural, but you're right that Henry was maybe working a little bit harder, like more, not like trying hard, but like he was in the work and in the narrative of the story of the match.
And I will say, whoever's idea was to put the hood on Kyle Matthews, I thought it was genius. Because I felt he came across such a bigger star with the mask on. Almost like Johnny Walker with Mr. Wrestling 2, who was just a good worker. But once he put on the mask, he became a megastar. Did you feel the mask added to Kyle Matthews?
Yeah, and that was actually the exact same kind of comparison I was going to make. I think that Matthews, while in no means old, I feel like has had a pretty long career already at this point for a guy his age.
And he has a generic look.
Yeah, and I think putting the mask on kind of freshens him up and makes him feel almost like a new guy and has a second life in his career. And it's very similar to Mr. Wrestling 2, like you said. I mean, put on the hood and you're a different person.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. And then Henry and Matthews had this fucking match, which I fucking loved. I don't know about you, but I loved it. And I gave it 4.25 stars. And I liked Henry as the heel. I love the opening. Has like a Tony Charles versus Les Thornton feel to it, which is I don't want to say famous, but since this match was happening in the South, Thornton and Charles would wrestle each other like in Southeastern or in Continental or down South, and they're like an Englishman and stuff. And so they work in these World of Sport spots in front of a total Southern crowd, and that's what these guys are doing. So it kind of had that akin to that. I loved how Amber Young set up Henry's heat, and then Henry's just destroying that arm. Loving Matthew's selling of that arm. Matthew's comeback is just flat out awesome. Totally bought Young's interference spot as a finish. Totally bought it. Henry's reverse Fujiwara was again awesome. Matthew's counters, and it's great, and he moved that into the crossface. I thought this thing was so good. They told a great story. It was tight, compact. They didn't overstay their welcome like a lot of times. I think this match only went like 12, 13 minutes. But a lot of times these guys will try to, you know, stretch it out to 20. But, man, they ran this tight, compact, excellent match on the floor. And they kept it right where they needed to be, man. I loved it. What about you?
Yeah, and I think I agree with you in a lot of ways. I gave it 3.75. I liked it maybe a little bit less than you, but still, I mean, going into this, so many places Henry is kind of in the super indies, and if Amber is even with him, she plays no part in the match because it's all about work, work, work. But this company, this place is so old school. The crowd is so old school that they play it, like you said. I mean, the manager is a big part of the match, and it just makes sense. I mean, if you're going to have a valet manager, why would you not use it? It's like, it's a waste of a gimmick. You know what I mean? It's setting up a table and nobody going through it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's
just, yeah.
You got to use the manager. She's there. So seeing Amber and Henry here work together when you don't see that much in, you know, PWX, Evolve, or these other places, was I was, like, kind of blown away with just how good it was. Henry playing that kind of old-school heel but with updated work rate was phenomenal. Kyle, again, as you talked about, looking like a star in the mask, the comeback was fantastic. Loved the comeback. The arm work from Henry and the arm selling by Kyle was, again, really great stuff. La Mystica into the bridging arm bar, like you said, loved that spot. Counter that, gets countered into a cross face. And yeah, Amber getting involved the whole way, getting injected for the distraction that you think, oh man, when they finally get rid of her, Henry's going to just use that distraction to get the win, but he doesn't. Again, Kyle comes out of that after getting really beat up. He locks in the submission hold, and it's similar to another match. I can't remember which one I talked about recently, where it's not a full comeback as he did just get beat up, but he does have enough to lock in the submission, which is a lot more believable. And as I said, 3¾ star. These guys told a great story, got great heat, and really used everything that they had, including the short time, to its advantage. Actually made the match more by having it have less, but then also like using the gimmicks and everything else they did here.
Yeah, I was pleasantly blown away by that match. Then that leads us to the taped fist street fight with the Approved versus the Lynch Mob. What are your thoughts here?
I liked a lot of the action, but I think there was some of the stuff that felt like it was going a bit over the top with the gimmickry of the taped fist match. I do kind of love the kind of calling back to that, but then going so far into, well, it's actually a no DQ, it's not just taped fist, so they're using a lot of chairs and all this. In my mind, I'm kind of like, well, let's just call it a no DQ match and drop the taped fist thing, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I thought that there was a lot of good action spots, kind of back and forth. I think the heels did a really good job of getting heat and coming across like assholes. I loved the Joey kind of getting taken out, or Matt getting taken out of the mats from that huge spot on all the built-up chairs in the corner, and Joey fighting both of them off, even looking like he's got a chance to put it away. Hitting that Canadian Destroyer, the Speed Force, but the ref gets pulled out of the ring, I thought was a good little spot, and he's able to fight them both off, but eventually there's just no way he's going to fight off their numbers. And then on top of that, they even add the gimmick on top with the punch with the chain fist. You got the commentator putting that over that you're not supposed to be using a chain fist, even if it is no DQ, it's supposed to be taped fist, so whatever. And I gave it 3 stars. I liked the match. But I think that they may have gone a little over the top with the gimmicks. But that's also me coming into this cold, so I don't know if they've been building this angle for a long time, and it actually makes sense.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I give it 2¼. I loved Matt Lynch's bump into the chairs. It was a lot of fun. Sometimes it was just hard to follow. I think that was more of my problem. I felt it could have been more nasty. I'm not exactly sure. But for some reason, something just didn't click with me. Then we get the, how do you say that? Tapai?
Taipei.
Taipei. That's how much death matches I watch. With Tank and Brad, who is this guy?
Brad Cash.
Cash, why don't you talk about this match?
I will. So Tank comes out looking scary like a motherfucker. Then he's got a tinier version of himself with a cane, who's just there to, I guess, keep him in line, which I love. Cash comes out to Danzig's mother, which is just awesome. And he's got a barbed wire bat and some other random gimmick that I can't tell what it is. From there, they start murdering each other with gusset plates and cheese graters. There's some Legos that they bump into. And at some point, Tank is able to grab a gigantic chokeslam onto a board covered in gusset plates. And then he hits a double stomp on him. This was wild and chaotic. This was deathmatch for deathmatch sake. They just hit each other with a bunch of crazy stuff and bled everywhere. I could definitely see a lot of people just wanting to skip this. After having watched essentially all of the big deathmatch tournaments this year, I am kind of in deathmatch mode for the year. I'm not saying that I like them, honestly. I'm just kind of desensitized to them at this point. That said, I think that they did all right here. I've seen Cash have worse deathmatches. I've seen him have better. I've also seen Tank have better. So I gave it 2¾. I don't think, unless you actually like death matches, that you should go out of your way in any way to watch this match, honestly. But if you do like Tank and you do like death matches, it's like a fine match to watch.
Yeah, I uh, I'm not a deathmatch guy. I enjoyed it enough for what it was. And I will say deathmatches, I can't even imagine watching a tournament. I mean, I have, don't get me wrong. But it feels like tournaments are making it even harder for people to get over because then everyone's trying to top each other, which was what I'm assuming is what makes it fun to watch. Just not for me. I gave this one 2.25 too. I enjoyed it. But again, I'm just not a deathmatch guy. But I believe both of them can kick the shit out of me. Then we got Jessica Lee versus Roxy. I didn't like this match at all. I'll give it 1 star. I just wasn't feeling it. I don't know what it was. I didn't think they were really good workers. What about you?
Yeah, and I don't think they were given a chance, honestly. I don't think they were meant to work. This is, I think, who is it? The Session Moth Martina in the UK gets announced as setting women's wrestling back 10 years. I think this match was actually not setting women's wrestling back 10 years, but it's actually set in women's wrestling from 10 years ago. They have not, the women's revolution has not come to Anarchy Wrestling yet, I think. So yeah, this felt like it was being treated as a gimmick match and like midgets, as they say, the women are like the midgets back in the day. I think that it's not treated as a serious wrestling match and it didn't really have a chance to be one.
Yeah. And then we get some promos, and this was, I thought the promos were really good stuff, hyping up the War Games and teasing that we're going to get a surprise partner. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, I liked the promos. I think the only problem for me is that the team of Jeremiah's battalion, their look just comes across heelish to me, and these promos didn't, I think, make it clear that they were the baby faces. So it didn't. Then when the match started, I was kind of thrown off in thinking that they were going to be the heels when it was very clearly worked with them as the faces. That was my only issue, is I think I could have used a better job of them making it very clear who were the good guys and the bad guys in these promos.
What'd you make of Jacob Ashworth versus Strychnine?
I liked Strychnine actually quite a bit. I think he hit some good shots, like the cheap headbutt that he uses to set up his heat. Honestly, he was better than what I expected. Ashmore really came across, again, kind of like, you know, he's this D-level wrestler, but he kind of also worked as like the redneck superhero that the crowd really got into. And he showed, he's got that kind of charisma that the crowd was behind him. I think they did a good job of saving a lot of gimmicky stuff, even with kind of having no DQ matches and death matches. I think that they did a good job of really saving the gimmicky near falls and trading big bombs just for this match. So it made this feel like it was the championship match of the night, like it was the biggest deal match. Again, that didn't really make it feel like it was the best match, but I think they did a good job of making this feel like a very important match. That said, coming out of it, I gave it 3.25 star. I would definitely want to see more from these guys, but I don't necessarily think that this made me feel like that they're like phenomenal or like this big deal, but I am interested in them.
I liked it enough. I gave it 2.5, but it almost felt like they're in a dead spot because I'm like, I was just ready for War Games, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure.
And that's what we got next, War Games. And I really enjoyed like the first, the 2-on-1 advantage earlier, because they really looked like they were mugging the shit out of the guy and beating the crap and the dude selling his ass off. It had a real mugging feel to it. I thought the violence was visceral. Some of the bumps were nutty. The cage was like getting destroyed. You definitely got the vibe of these guys hated each other. I totally dug Azrael's low rent superstar entrance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's pretty creative for such a, you know, for, you know, since, I mean, it looks like the place has like no internet or even the air where they wrestle. So I thought that was really impressive. I wonder if they had to clear the rat droppings out of the out of the area before he came down.
Oh Lord!
But man, I enjoyed this. I'm a mark for War Games, and then you make Gunner look like the stud that he is. I mean, he's the blue chipper, man. And that's what you need to do, is him fucking destroying people and going over. I loved it. 3.5 stars. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, and I think that, again, I think the guys who stood out, as you talk about, were Gunner, Azrael's nice entrance, and then Cyrus the Destroyer, which I see that the SCI are building to a big Cyrus versus Gunner match as a spectacle match for the Trios tournament coming up. So I think, this is kind of working hand in hand with those guys being important parts of the companies and yep. important parts of this area's wrestling. Cyrus getting thrown into the cage is, I think, the craziest thing, as the cage looks like it's breaking apart, you talked about, and the officials are trying to make sure it's going to hold or if it's going to just be completely destroyed. Azrael's entrance was very interesting, and I do like the idea that there's just no way in hell that this building has Wi-Fi, because it does not look like it does. In the end, after it turns into the Match Beyond, I like Gunner getting the surrender from Azrael with a saw in his mouth on a camel clutch. I think that's pretty intense and a good way the smart thing to do. The guy who's, not a regular, the guy who's coming back as a surprise, he ends up taking the loss because he's gone. Gunner gets the win because he's the blue chipper. So I gave it 3.5. I liked the action. This is one where we talk about stuff being hard to see. I mean, stuff was really hard to see in here. You got the cage. You got a lot of action.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this was a tough one to watch. Again, if you're trying to take notes, this is a tough one to keep up with. But if you're just watching for fun, this is a downright fun match.
Yeah, because it's not like it's Turner Broadcasting when they have, cameras inside the cage and we're able to follow and stuff. So, yeah, it's just different. But, man, it was damn fun. I got to say the show overall was pretty damn fun, though. I enjoyed it. I'd give it a thumbs up. What about you?
Yeah, for sure. Give it a big time thumbs up. Check them out. You talked about it. They're on Powerbomb TV. So go watch the shows over there on Powerbomb TV. And I guess follow the company on Twitter at Anarchy Landmark and kind of see what they're going on, because they're trying to build. They're a small company now, like you talked about with history, but they're trying to update and come into the 2017.
But keep it old school, boys. With that said, man, I don't think we have anything else we got to talk about. Tim, anything you want to mention, any plugs or what have you?
Same old for me. Got some podcasts coming out. We accidentally missed a week on Lucha Undead for unforeseen reasons, but we'll be making that up shortly. Got a fun episode of Top Beer with a first time ever guest with the host of Sports Entertainment Shrinks, Dan Scotty. That's out, so I say definitely go check that one out. Otherwise, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Yeah, follow me at Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. CWF Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest, October 13th and 14th. Also, debuting, I think we're going to recording Monday, myself, Kelly Nelson, and Johnny Sorrow, since Space City got canceled, we are going to be debuting World Cast, which is world class. Instead of class, we are casting because we're podcasting. we're going to be talking World Class Wrestling. That since the network dumped a shitload of it on there. So we're going to start with episode, I think, one or two, whatever's on the network. And we're going to do an episode a week unless we hit the big super shows. Then we'll combine some episodes. So that'll be debuting next week. So keep an eye out for that if you hear this. And if you're a fan of Space City, I think you'll like this one too. It's like a kind of a continuation. There's a lot of, in 1982 World Class, there's a lot of the same wrestlers we talked about on Space City working underneath in World Class and stuff. So do me a favor, check it out. Everyone, keep on watching the wrestling. Find something you like and watch it. Have a good one, folks.
Mother, tell your children not to walk my way. Tell your children not to hear my words, what they mean, what they say. Mother, mother, can you keep them in?